Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of Elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Story one. My name is Richard, and I live in the outskirts of Port Harcourt, Nigeria. It's one of those places where the air is heavy with silence at night, and every creak of wood or wind brushing against the roof sounds like footsteps you can't see. I've never really believed in ghosts. I always thought people just liked to scare themselves. That was until something happened that I still can't explain. And I've tried. God knows I've tried. It was a Tuesday. I remember that clearly because Tuesdays were the days my brother Jide and I usually did our grocery shopping. We always went around midday when the market wasn't too crowded. That day we left the house around 12:30 p.m., got to the store by 1 p.m. Nothing felt off. No strange feelings. Nothing. It was just another hot, sticky afternoon. As we walked past the fruit section, Jide suddenly stopped and smiled. "Ah, whale," he said, tapping a guy on the shoulder. The man turned around and yeah, it was Whale. I recognized him immediately. We all went to the same secondary school years back. Whale was Jide's classmate and a bit of a troublemaker, always full of jokes. I hadn't seen him since graduation. Whale looked normal. He was dressed in a brown t-shirt, jeans, and slippers. His usual cheeky smile was there, but I noticed his voice was weirdly flat, like there was no tone behind it, like he was talking, but not really there. I thought maybe he was tired. "Guy, you just disappear, finish O," Jide laughed, slapping his back lightly. Whale smiled, nodded, and said, "Just been dealing with stuff." He glanced at me and gave a small wave. "Hey, Richard." "Hey, Whale," I said. We talked for maybe 3 minutes, very dry conversation. He didn't laugh once, and neither did we. I noticed he never touched anything, not the fruits, not even his phone. He kept both hands in his pockets the whole time. Then he just said, "I need to go. Take care." He walked away. I remember staring after him for a moment because something about him felt off, but I shook it off. We paid for our stuff and went home. That night around 8 p.m., we were in the sitting room. Jide was scrolling through his phone when he suddenly froze. "What?" I asked. He didn't answer right away. He just stared at the screen. Then he turned to me, pale. "Someone just posted that Whale died this evening." I blinked. "Whale? The same Whale we saw today?" He showed me his screen, a WhatsApp status post. It read, "Rest in peace, Whale. You fought hard, but God knows best. 12 hours in coma. You're free now." I read it twice, slowly. "Wait, what do you mean 12 hours in coma?" Jide looked at me, then looked at the time. "That means he's been in a coma since around 8 this morning. We saw him at 1 inch. We just stared at each other. "No, no, that doesn't make sense," I said, standing up. "That doesn't... Maybe it's not the same Whale." But Jide was already calling someone, another schoolmate. He put the call on speaker. "Hello?" The guy answered. "Bros, is it true about Whale?" Jide asked. "Yeah," the guy replied, his voice low. "He collapsed this morning. They said it was internal bleeding. He went into a coma before they even got to the hospital. Died around 7:45 this evening." Jide looked at me. I was cold all over. "We saw him today," Jide said, "at the market. Around 1.075. The guy on the phone paused. "You? What? "We talked to him," I said, stepping closer to the phone. "He said he'd been dealing with stuff. He waved at me. He was wearing a brown shirt." The guy went silent for a second, then whispered, He hasn't been conscious since this morning. That's what his sister said. He was hooked up to machines all day. He never woke up. We ended the call. No more words, just silence. The silence was so thick that even the tick of the wall clock felt loud. I kept pacing. I even checked the groceries again, as if maybe Whale's touch would have left something behind. But of course, there was nothing. Jide sat down, rubbing his hands over his face like he was trying to scrub the memory off. At some point, I said, Maybe we saw someone that looked like him. Jide shook his head. He called my name, Rich. He said my name. He called you by name. And then the worst part hit me. That smile, that eerie, empty smile Whale gave when he said goodbye. Like someone who knew he wouldn't be back. Like someone who wasn't really alive anymore. I didn't sleep that night. I kept replaying the scene in my head. The way he kept his hands in his pockets. The flat voice. The way he never laughed. The eyes that didn't quite focus on us. It wasn't Whale. Not fully. It was something else. Something using his face, his voice. I never believed in spirits. But now, every time I pass that fruit aisle in the market, I feel sick. I avoid looking at people too closely. I don't greet old classmates anymore. Because I know, not everything walking around is still living. Story 2. I'm Mike, 42, from southeastern Minnesota. I'm a mechanic and part-time camper. Nothing out of the ordinary about me. I don't drink, don't do drugs, never believed in ghosts or any of that crap. At least not until what happened on County Road 17 last summer. It was the last leg of my trip. I'd just spent 12 days up north with the RV, fishing and unplugging. Nothing fancy, just me, a fifth-wheel camper, and my dog, though I dropped him at my sister's for this one. It was late, about 11 p.m., and I was determined to sleep in my own bed that night. I had 2 hours left to go, and I knew that stretch of highway well. 20 miles of nothing but woods, one worn-out gas station tavern hybrid, and a single-lane blacktop cutting through the dark like a scar. The road was empty, as expected. I slowed down to around 50 since deer love to jump out like suicidal maniacs around that area. My headlights were the only lights around for miles. No street lamps, no house lights, just thick black trees and the hum of tires on asphalt. Then I saw her, just ahead on the right side of the road. She was walking with the traffic, like she didn't have a care in the world. A young woman, maybe early 20s, tall, dark hair pulled back. She was wearing a short pleated skirt and a white crop top. What threw me off were the thigh-high stockings. Who the hell walks around out here dressed like that? At first I thought maybe her car broke down and she was walking to that rundown motel back by the gas station. But I hadn't passed any car. None. And that place was miles behind now. I slowed to a crawl and pulled over just ahead of her. My hazard lights flashed against the trees like a heartbeat. I grabbed my flashlight from the dash and stepped out. "Hey," I called out, keeping my voice steady. "You okay? Need help?" Nothing. No answer. No sound. Just the steady chirp of crickets and the hum of my engine. I walked to the rear of the camper, expecting her to catch up, or at least hear her footsteps in the gravel. But when I turned around, she was gone. Gone. Not walking up to me. Not standing there confused. Not running. Just gone. I spun the flashlight around, sweeping the short grass, the roadside ditches, even up into the trees out of sheer panic. But it made no sense. The grass had dew on it, 6 inches tall at most, and it hadn't been disturbed. No footprints, no trail, no broken twigs. I checked behind the camper, thinking maybe she darted that way. Nothing. She couldn't have gotten past me without me seeing. She couldn't have climbed the fence that lined the woods without a sound. And definitely not in that outfit. And even if she had run, I would have heard it, seen it, something. But there was just silence, that oppressive, heavy kind that sinks into your chest. My heart started thumping. Not like anxiety, more like I was being watched, like I'd walked into a place I wasn't supposed to be. My skin was crawling, and every hair on my arms was standing straight up. I backed toward my truck, still swinging the light everywhere, whispering, "What the hell?" Over and over. Right before I reached the driver's side door, I heard it. Not footsteps, not a voice. Laughter, behind me. soft, girlish, almost playful. I froze. That kind of freeze where your legs ignore every order from your brain. It wasn't echoing from the woods or bouncing from somewhere far. It was close. Like, just behind the camper, close. I turned fast, light aimed, jaw clenched. Nothing. Not a damn thing. But the laughter hadn't come from my head. It wasn't imagination. It was real. Too real. I didn't bother calling out again. I jumped in the truck, locked the doors, and floored it. The fifth wheel swayed behind me, and I didn't give a single crap. I just wanted out. Away from whatever the hell that was. I kept checking the rearview mirror. Every couple minutes, just in case. Around 5 miles later, I told myself maybe I hallucinated it. I'd been driving all day. I was tired. Maybe it was a weird combination of stress and road haze. I reached over to kill the hazard lights.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta have it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
But then I saw it. The backseat mirror, driver's side. For half a second, just a flash. Her sitting in the back of my truck. Not screaming, not angry, just staring. A half smile on her face, same outfit, same face, same girl. I swerved. I almost lost control. When I whipped my head around, the seat was empty. Empty. I didn't stop driving until I hit my driveway. I ran inside without unhooking the camper, locked every door, sat on the couch in the dark with a bat across my lap, breathing like I'd just outrun a tornado. I never told anyone. Not until now. Because how do you explain that? How do you tell someone a ghost, or whatever the hell she was, hitched a ride with you? I'll never take that road again. I don't care if it adds 3 hours. I'll never drive it, ever. She was real. I know what I saw, and I swear on everything I've got. She knew I saw her. Story 3. I still can't quite explain it, but I swear what happened that night at my aunt's house was real. I wasn't expecting anything strange, and I didn't want to believe in ghosts. But that night, I can't shake the feeling that something was there. It was just me staying the night. My aunt was out visiting family, and I was given the guest room, the one with all my great-grandmother's old furniture. I had never really known her, but I'd heard the stories. My aunt used to talk about her a lot. My great-grandma was a quiet, stoic woman who passed away a few years back. I guess she left behind a lot of things, including a heavy old couch that smelled like dust and nostalgia. The house itself was old, wooden floors that creaked under your feet, and heavy curtains that always seemed to absorb more darkness than should be possible. But it was peaceful enough, or at least it seemed like it would be. The night started out normal. The room was quiet, with the soft hum of the house's heating system in the background. I settled into the couch thinking about the next day's plans. Everything felt perfectly ordinary, until it didn't. It was around 2 a.m. when I woke up shivering. I mean, it was freezing cold, way colder than it should have been. I pulled the blanket tighter around me, thinking maybe the heater had cut out or something. But no, when I looked around, the room was still perfectly normal. No drafts, no open windows. The heater was working, but it felt like I was outside in the middle of winter. I tried to ignore the chill, but then I heard something. Loud noises like metal clinking, scraping against wood. I thought I was just imagining it, so I sat up, heart pounding in my chest. The noises were getting louder. I hesitated for a moment, not sure if I should check or stay put. But curiosity got the better of me, so I grabbed my phone to use as a flashlight and turned it on. That's when I saw it. My great-grandmother's old sewing machine, sitting across the room next to the window, was moving. It was as if the machine was alive. The treadle was shifting, the needle going up and down as if someone was operating it, but no one was there. I froze, not knowing what to do. I rubbed my eyes to make sure I wasn't seeing things, but no, it was still happening. The machine's metal parts were grinding against each other, moving in jerky, unnatural movements. It stopped for a second, and for a moment everything was silent again. I thought maybe I had just imagined it, that it was some strange coincidence. But then the noise came again, even louder this time, like the sewing machine was shaking itself apart. My breath caught in my throat, and my hands started to tremble. The light from my phone flickered as I watched the machine's compartments spin and jerk, struggling to stop. Slowly, the noise came to a halt, and for a second, everything was still. The machine sat there motionless, like it had never moved at all. I couldn't get back to sleep after that. I was wide awake, my mind racing. My thoughts kept going back to the moment when the machine started working on its own. It didn't make sense. It shouldn't have been possible. I kept telling myself it was just a malfunction or some trick of the mind. But deep down, I knew that wasn't true. There was no logical explanation. I never told my aunt about what happened. She'd never believe me, not in a million years. The rest of my family? Same story. They'd brush it off, dismissing it as a dream or a trick of the mind. But I'll never forget that night. The next day, I left the house early. Didn't even want to be around after what I'd seen. I didn't even bother saying goodbye. I just needed to get out of there. I think part of me still hopes it was all just a strange coincidence, a weird trick my mind played on me, but I know better. My great-grandmother's sewing machine wasn't just broken. It was moving. It was working. And to this day, I can't shake the feeling that something or someone was there with me that night. Something I didn't understand. Something that made the air freeze and the room come alive with terror. I don't know if it was a ghost or something else, but I know what I saw, and I'll never forget the chill that ran through my bones, or the sound of the sewing machine, clicking and grinding in the silence of that old room. Story 4. I live just outside Baton Rouge, in a pretty quiet area, with old houses and a lot of trees. I rent a small one-story home with my boyfriend, Jesse. It's not fancy, but it's enough for the two of us and our two dogs. The neighborhood's not exactly bustling. Most people around here keep to themselves, and we're the youngest couple on the block by at least 20 years. This happened in late September. I remember that because it was still hot during the day, but the evenings had just started getting cool enough to open the doors and let the breeze in. That night, we were eating takeout, pizza, I think, and watching TV in the living room. Our front door was wide open, and just the screen door was shut. We do that a lot for airflow. Nothing weird, nothing out of the ordinary. Then the screen door slammed, I mean hard, like someone had grabbed it and yanked it open all the way, then let it fly shut with full force. It scared the crap out of both of us. Jesse jumped up first and I followed him out to the porch. I was expecting to see someone walking away, maybe some dumb kid messing around, but there was nobody. What hit me as soon as we stepped out was the smell. This heavy, sticky, sweet floral smell just smacked me in the face. I don't even know how to describe it, except it reminded me of being at my grandma's funeral when I was a kid. That same overwhelming scent of lilies and roses, way too strong and fake, like it was rotting in the sun. It wasn't coming from the neighbors' yards or any flowers. This was concentrated, like someone had poured it all over the steps. Jesse goes, "What the hell is that?" I didn't answer him. I just stood there, breathing through my mouth and trying not to gag. It wasn't just the smell. The air felt thick, heavy like humidity, but without the heat, like something was there with us standing close. We didn't stay out long. The dogs were barking inside, and we both kind of looked at each other and wordlessly turned back in. The whole mood in the house had changed. Just wrong. Office. I felt like I was being watched from every corner. We went straight to our room. I sat down on the edge of the bed, and one of our dogs, Blue, hopped up and curled into my lap. I remember this clearly. His body was tense, ears up, not like he usually is when he wants affection. Jesse was pacing a little, trying to talk through it, like we could logic it away. "Maybe someone walked by and opened it. I don't know," he said. "Could have been a neighbor kid." I didn't say anything. I was staring at the hallway just outside our bedroom door. It runs down the length of the house, with the guest room at the very end. That's when I saw it. I swear to God, I saw it. A tall, dark shape moved past the door. Not like a person walking through light. It didn't reflect anything. It was just absence. A solid, black mass that blocked everything out behind it. No features, no noise. Just the silhouette moving fast, too fast, down the hall. And then it turned into the guest room and disappeared. I couldn't breathe for a second. I didn't scream or say anything. I just stared. Then Blue saw it too. He jumped off my lap and ran to the door, barking his head off. Not playful barking. His whole body was stiff, hackles up, and he was growling, whining, snapping at the empty air. I've had him since he was a puppy. I've never seen him react like that. Ever. "What?" Jesse asked, spinning around. "What? What's going on?" I couldn't even speak. I just pointed. My hand was shaking and I realized I was crying. "It walked into the room," I whispered. "Something walked down the hall. It walked into the guest room." Jesse didn't argue. He didn't go check it out like some dumbass in a movie. He looked at me, then looked at the dog still barking like crazy at the empty hallway and said, "Okay, we're going. Right now." We grabbed the dogs, got in the car and left. No packing, no checking doors, nothing. We just left. We drove to a crappy motel near the highway and stayed the night there. We didn't even talk much. I think we were both trying to figure out if we'd actually seen what we thought we saw. But the thing is, if I had been alone, maybe I could have convinced myself I imagined it. But Jesse saw the screen door slam. He smelled that weird floral scent. And Blue saw it too. I keep coming back to that. He saw it. Dogs don't hallucinate. The next day we went home. Nothing was out of place. No signs of a break-in. No lingering smell. The guest room was empty, but the house felt dead, like a vacuum. Like whatever had been there wasn't anymore, but had left something hollow behind. We never saw anything again. Nothing moved, nothing slammed, but I don't need it to happen again. Once was enough. Once was too much. I never believed in ghosts before. I laughed at people who talked about stuff like that. But now? Now I check the hallway every night before I go to sleep. I don't leave the door open anymore. Story 5, and I lived in Rockhampton back then, in this cheap little rental just off Denison Street. Humid, always smelled a bit like mildew, and full of cockroaches no matter how much you cleaned. It wasn't my place. I was crashing at a mate's house while I was between jobs and staying sober. His name was Blake. The house was old, creaky, up on wooden stilts like a lot of the old Queenslanders around here. You could feel it shift slightly when someone walked down the hallway. I remember Blake warning me one night while we were drinking instant coffee and watching something stupid on YouTube. He just kind of casually said, "Oh, don't freak out if you hear stuff at night. This place is weird." I laughed. I thought he was just trying to mess with me. Blake was a bit of a stoner, always talking crap, so I didn't take it seriously. He mentioned drawers opening on their own and doors slamming shut, that kind of thing. I figured it was just rats, or the wind, or him half asleep and dreaming crap. I'd never seen or heard anything myself. One night, though, I remember this too clearly. I was sleeping on the futon in the lounge. We'd been up playing World of Warcraft way too long, like until 3 a.m. or something. and I was too full of pizza and Coke to move, so I just crashed where I was. No windows were open, no fans on, just dead quiet. I was half asleep when I heard them. Footsteps. Not like creaks or house noises, actual footsteps. They started soft, from the far right side of the hallway behind the kitchen. Slow, deliberate. You ever hear women's heels on wood? Not the click-clack kind. These were heavier, like old-fashioned shoes. The kind you see in old movies or history books. A dull thunk of the heel followed by a slight scuff. Every other step. Like the person walking had one leg just a bit off. It moved right to left, past the lounge, into the kitchen. I sat up, frozen, didn't breathe. My heart was thumping hard in my chest. The footsteps stopped in the kitchen, then slowly started pacing, back and forth, like someone was thinking or looking for something. Not fast, but steady. Then silence. I don't know what I was thinking, but I whispered, "Blake?" Nothing. I called a bit louder. "Oi, Blake!" I heard him snore from the other end of the house. He was out cold. I didn't move, just stared toward the kitchen. There was no light, but I swear I could see the darker black of someone standing there, motionless. Then the footsteps again, same exact pattern, left to right now, coming back, heel, scuff, step. They passed by the entrance to the lounge. I should have seen someone. There's no door separating the rooms, just an open archway. But nothing was there. Nothing. Still, the footsteps were there. Real as anything. They continued back toward the hallway and then just stopped. I don't know how long I sat there staring. Maybe 10 minutes, maybe an hour. Eventually, I just pulled the thin blanket over my head and lay there, sweating and trying not to cry. I didn't sleep. When the sun came up, I got up, went straight to the kitchen and looked around like an idiot. Nothing out of place. Blake came out of his room, rubbing his eyes, and saw me looking pale as hell. "You heard her, didn't you?" he asked, like it was nothing. I nodded. He poured himself a bowl of cereal and said, "Yeah, that happens sometimes. I think it's the lady who used to live here. House was empty for like 10 years before I moved in. Neighbors said an old woman died in the bathroom and no one found her for weeks." I asked him if he ever saw anything. He shrugged and said, "Nah, just the footsteps. Sometimes drawers open and stuff gets thrown. Worst was the mirror in the second bathroom. It flew off the wall one night and smashed. That was the only time I thought about moving. I didn't last another week there. And I'll tell you this, I don't believe in ghosts. I didn't. But I know what I heard that night. Shoes, pacing, scuff, step. Clear as day. There's no way to explain it. No wind, no rats, no pipes, no dreams. I was awake, fully awake. And if I ever hear that sound again, I don't care where I am. I'm running. Story 6. I live in a split-level house in northern Wisconsin near Lake Holcomb. It's quiet out here. Lots of trees, lots of silence. The kind of place where you notice every creak and thump. I'm the youngest of three, and my brother and sister are out of state now, so it's usually just me, my mom, and dad. But that night, it was just me. I was 17. My parents had driven to Minneapolis for my cousin's engagement dinner. I didn't go because I had work that weekend, and honestly, I just didn't feel like being social. I was glad to have the house to myself. Friday night, I finished a late shift at the diner and got home around 11:30. I remember it exactly because my phone was almost dead, and I plugged it in right before tossing my bag on the couch. I wasn't tired, though, so I went to the kitchen, made a grilled cheese, then sat on the couch and turned on Netflix. I didn't even get through the opening credits before I started hearing it. Footsteps, upstairs. Not fast, not heavy, just a slow and steady pace. Back and forth. Like someone walking from the bathroom to my room, then to the guest room, then looping again. At first I thought I was just hearing the house settle, or maybe something outside. We get raccoons sometimes. But this wasn't like that. These were definite human steps. Measured, deliberate. I paused the TV. Just dead silence and the soft tick of the wall clock. I stood up, walked to the stairway. The steps stopped. I stood at the bottom, waiting. Nothing. I said, kind of under my breath, "Hello?" Nothing. I didn't go upstairs. I figured I was tired and maybe my brain was messing with me. I sat back down, started the show again. 5 minutes in, footsteps again, same pattern, back and forth. I muted the TV, still there. I know the layout of our house. I could tell from the rhythm that it wasn't random movement, it was pacing. I stood again, this time more nervous than curious. I crept back to the stairs, not even stepping on the creaky floorboard near the pantry. But the moment I turned the corner, dead silence. I called my mom. She didn't pick up. I left a message like, "Hey, I think I might be freaking myself out. Call me when you can." Then I went back to the living room, turned all the lights on, and just sat there. I didn't even try to finish the show. I just sat. I must have drifted off because next thing I know, it was 1:10 a.m., and my phone buzzed with a low battery warning. I grabbed it to check the missed calls. None. And then something made my blood freeze. I noticed the hallway light was off. I had turned that one on. I was sure of it. All of them. I even remembered flicking it on. That switch is sticky. It clicks loudly when you use it. There's no way I didn't. I stood up and the footsteps started again, except this time they weren't upstairs. They were on the stairs, each step slow and heavy, like someone dragging their feet. I can't explain what that did to me. I stood frozen in the middle of the living room, my grilled cheese half eaten, my phone shaking in my hand. I didn't even think to call anyone. I just watched the stairwell, and then the footsteps stopped. But nothing came down. I waited. 5 seconds. 10. A full minute. Then I heard something that has burned itself into my memory forever. One long breath. Right at the bottom of the stairs. Not mine, not even human sounding. It was this low, guttural exhale, like someone was standing just around the corner, breathing through clenched teeth, like they were angry or hurt or both. I didn't move. I didn't even blink. I felt this pressure, like the air had thickened. The room suddenly felt smaller. Then the hallway light snapped back on by itself. Not flickered, not dimmed, snapped. The sound of the switch flipping echoed like a gunshot. And in that instant, I felt a gust of freezing air shoot past me, like something invisible had bolted across the living room toward the back door. I ran. I didn't even think about grabbing my phone charger or my shoes. I just ran out the front door in socks and joggers, didn't even lock it. I sat on the porch barefoot and shaking until the sun came up. I didn't go back inside until my parents got home around noon the next day. I told my mom everything. She didn't even question it. She just nodded and said, "I've heard the steps too." That was it. We never talked about it again. We've had the house checked, of course. There's nothing wrong with the wiring. No rats, no raccoons, nothing. But I know what I heard. I know what I felt. That wasn't a dream. That wasn't stress. Something was in that house with me that night, and I'm sure it's still there. We don't sleep with our bedroom doors open anymore. And my mom, she always checks the windows before we go anywhere. Twice, story 7. I live in a small one-bedroom apartment over a corner liquor store in Rochester, New York. Nothing fancy, just cheap and quiet. Most nights I work late shifts at a call center, and when I get home, I pretty much crash. I'm not into spiritual stuff, never was. I don't even believe in luck, let alone ghosts or any of that nonsense. But I made the mistake of humoring my friend Brian one night, and that's when things got seriously messed up. It was last November, cold as hell, snow building up outside. Brian came over with a bottle of something cheap and a cardboard Ouija board he bought off Amazon. I laughed at him when he pulled it out of his bag. "You've got to be kidding me," I said. "I'm serious, man. I just want to try it," he said. "We don't even have to take it seriously, just for fun." I should have said no. I should have told him to take that crap back out into the snow. But I didn't. I was bored, tired, a little buzzed. So I said, "Fine. Let's see if you can talk to Casper." We cleared a spot on the floor and lit one sad candle. Turned off the lights. I felt dumb already. He told me to place two fingers lightly on the planchette, the triangle-shaped thing with the little glass window. We both did. The board looked like something out of a cheap horror movie. the alphabet in two curved rows, numbers underneath, yes and no in the corners, goodbye at the bottom. "Is anyone there?" Brian asked in a low voice, trying to sound serious. Nothing happened. "Hello? Any spirits in this room?" Still nothing, I snorted. "Maybe the ghosts are frozen stiff." Then the damn thing twitched, just a little, barely a move. I thought maybe Brian nudged it, so I looked at him, but he looked back like he was thinking the same about me. We asked a few more questions. "Where are you from? Are you good or bad?" Stupid crap. And slowly the planchette started to move more. I still figured Brian was doing it, or maybe it was that unconscious movement people talk about. It spelled out a few letters, mostly gibberish. Nothing made sense. I wasn't buying any of it. But then I got irritated. I said, "All right, if you're real, do something. Anything. Make something happen." I leaned back and waited. We both did. The candle flickered. "But that's normal. When, maybe? I live in an old place." Then maybe 5 seconds later, the vacuum cleaner turned on by itself. It was sitting in the corner of the room, not plugged in. I swear on everything, it wasn't even plugged in. Brian shot to his feet, eyes wide. "What the dude?" I stood up, heart pounding so hard it hurt. The vacuum just stood there vibrating, humming loud in the middle of the dark. I didn't move. I couldn't. That sound filled the whole room. Unnatural. Wrong. "No, no, no," I said, backing up, grabbing at the cord, except there wasn't a cord to grab. It wasn't even connected to the outlet. It just kept running. It wasn't one of those cordless vacuums either. This was a piece of crap I bought secondhand, the kind that needs a plug. That made no sense. I kicked the power switch. Nothing. Brian grabbed the plug. It was lying on the floor and held it up to me. "It's not even plugged in, man." I could see it with my own eyes, but the vacuum kept running. That sound, I swear it was changing. It started to rise in pitch like a drill, like a scream. High-pitched, not right. "Shut it off," I shouted. "I don't know how." It was shaking now. I thought it might burst apart. My brain felt like it was splitting in half. I ran to the circuit breaker box by the kitchen and yanked the main switch. Whole apartment went black. Everything silent, except the vacuum was still on. I didn't move for a second. Neither of us did. Just total darkness and that screaming, whining noise coming from the corner of the room. That sound didn't belong in this world. It felt like it was crawling under my skin. Then it stopped. Just like that. No winding down, no slowing, just off. Silence. I flipped the breaker back on. Lights came back. The candle had gone out somewhere in the chaos. The board was still on the floor, the planchette now sitting over the word goodbye. Brian didn't say anything. He looked pale, like he was going to puke. I grabbed the vacuum and looked it over, still unplugged. No power, no explanation. I even checked the damn model online. There's no battery, no backup, anything. I don't know what we let in that night. I don't care to find out. I threw that board in the dumpster behind the building, but the next morning it was sitting outside my apartment door. I didn't touch it again. I called maintenance and told them to remove it. They didn't ask questions. It's been 6 months and I still sleep with the lights on. I unplug every single appliance before I go to bed. I haven't let a single person bring anything weird into my place since then. People can believe whatever they want, laugh about ghosts, say it's just energy or psychology or the power of suggestion. I don't care. I know what I saw. I know what I heard. That vacuum wasn't plugged in, and it still turned on. Story 8. I'm not the kind of person who tells ghost stories. Never have been. I'm from Akron, Ohio, born and raised, and people out here don't really go for that kind of thing. We talk weather, we talk sports, we complain about our backs, but we don't talk about ghosts. And if we do, it's in the kind of voice people use when they say they've seen something, but don't want to be laughed at. That said, I'm about to tell you something that happened to me when I was 17, and I've never talked about it out loud, not even to my wife, because it still messes with my head, and I don't want the look people give you when they think you're either lying or mentally slipping. I grew up on East Market Street, not far from the old Goodyear plant. Our house was this tired, two-story thing with green siding that always looked like it needed to be power washed. It was one of those older homes that used to be elegant in a different era, before families started filling them up with Walmart furniture and stained carpets. Ours had a cracked driveway, a backyard with half a fence, and a busted garage door that we never fixed because no one used it anyway. The house came with a piano, not a nice one, this old upright with peeling keys and a cracked leg. It sat in the living room like a forgotten piece of a different life. My mom said the woman who lived there before us had died in that house, alone. Apparently, she used to play the piano every night before bed. She had a thing for Beethoven, Moonlight Sonata especially. I didn't think much of it at first. I mean, yeah, it's creepy, but you hear that kind of thing with old houses all the time, right? The first time I heard it, I assumed I was dreaming. It was a Saturday night around 2 or 3 a.m., and I woke up thinking someone left the TV on downstairs. But it wasn't the TV. It was music. Real soft, real slow. Piano music. It took me a second to place it, but when I did, my stomach tightened. Moonlight Sonata. That exact slow, haunting pace, like someone was deliberately dragging each note out. I sat up in bed listening. The sound was too clear, too... There, I wasn't dreaming, and nobody in my house played piano. Hell, we barely dusted it. I got up, still groggy, and stepped into the hallway. Everything was dark. No lights, no voices. Just that song, floating up the stairs like smoke. I walked down barefoot, freezing. Every step creaked. The house felt wrong. I don't know how else to say it, like walking into a room right after someone screamed. That kind of thick, charged air. I called out, Mom? No answer. Dad? Nothing. Just the piano. I flipped the hallway light on, but it flickered and died immediately. Not like a bulb blew out, like the switch didn't do anything. Dead. That's when I stopped at the bottom of the stairs. The music was coming from the living room. I turned the corner and froze. The piano bench was pulled out. The lid over the keys was open. But no one was there. The keys were pressing themselves. I'm not exaggerating. I saw it. The keys were physically moving, like invisible fingers were playing them. I watched the middle C dip down and come back up. Then the next note. And the next. I couldn't move. I didn't blink. The song kept going. I don't even like classical music, but that night I heard every single note like it was being stabbed into me. Then it stopped, just like that. Mid-measure, the air dropped about 10 degrees. You know that dry, freezer-burn kind of cold? It hit me in the chest. I remember whispering, "What the fuck?" without even realizing I said it out loud. And then, swear on my life, the piano bench dragged itself back under the piano. Real slow, wood scraping against the floor, no hands, no feet, nothing. I backed up into the hallway, hit the wall behind me. I couldn't breathe. I remember my hands were shaking so hard I couldn't even grab my phone from my pocket. And then, in the doorway, I heard this sound, like someone exhaled right next to my ear. Long, quiet, not a sigh, just breath. I spun around. Nothing. Nobody there. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. I sat on my bed with the lights on, every light I could turn on, just waiting for morning. The next day, I asked my mom if she ever heard the piano playing. She didn't even look up from her coffee. She just said, "Sometimes." I said, "You never thought to say anything?" She shrugged. "It's an old house." "That's it." That was her explanation. "It's an old house." Like that's supposed to account for keys pressing down by themselves. I didn't hear it again after that. Not once. We moved out when I was 19, and I haven't been back. I don't even drive down that street. But here's what gets me. A few years ago, I looked up the woman who lived there before us. Her name was Alma Ryerson, music teacher. Gave lessons out of that very living room for 30 years. Died of a stroke, alone, at her piano. And the last song she ever taught, according to one of her old students? Moonlight Sonata. Believe me or don't, makes no difference to me. I don't tell this story to convince people. I tell it because I need to. Story 9. I've never told anyone this before. Not because I'm scared they won't believe me, but because I don't want to talk about it. Still don't. But here I am. This happened back when I was still in college. Living alone in a cramped apartment off campus in Worcester, Massachusetts. It was a cold concrete box of a place, the kind where the windows never sealed properly and the radiator hissed like it was alive. I spent most of my time inside, studying or pretending to, drinking cheap coffee and letting the outside world stay out. I was taking a survey course on early English drama, one of those gene ed requirements I hated myself for procrastinating. That week, we were supposed to read The Alchemist by Ben Jonson. I remember the professor saying it was a satirical masterpiece. Whatever, I didn't own the textbook because it was like $120 and I was flat broke. I figured I'd just find the play online somewhere, skim it, write something fake deep, and move on. That night was quiet. No parties upstairs, no traffic outside. Just me, my laptop, and the ancient desk I'd picked up from a thrift store for 10 bucks. Behind my desk was a walk-in closet that I had turned into my own personal little library. I was obsessed with collecting old books, the weirder and older the better, estate sales, Goodwill bins, even a few stolen from campus dumpsters. I kept them all lined up carefully on these thick wooden shelves I drilled into the drywall. I treated them like glass. Some of them were worth money, but I wasn't into it for the value. I just liked the feel of them, the smell, the weight. Anyway, I was sitting there that night typing nonsense into Google about The Alchemist, trying to find a readable version that didn't look like it was scanned by a blind monkey. And out of nowhere, I had this random thought. Didn't I already have this play in one of my anthologies? It was just a flash. I remembered an old Norton anthology I'd gotten for free from a kid who dropped out. I could picture the cover, the thick spine, the tiny print. I remembered thinking once that it had a lot of obscure stuff in it. Maybe Jonson was in there, but I brushed the idea off. I didn't want to get up, didn't want to start digging. Too much work. I figured Project Gutenberg had to be easier. Then I heard the sound. It was a thump. Not loud, not dramatic, just a dull, flat, heavy sound. Like someone had dropped a big book from shoulder height onto carpet. But it came from the closet, right behind me. I stopped typing. My body froze in this weird, half-twisted position, like my mind was trying to catch up with what my ears had just heard. I slowly turned in my chair and stared at the closet door, which was open just a crack. Nothing moved, no breeze, no draft, no explanation. I stood up. My legs felt cold, like blood had stopped moving. I walked toward the closet, pushed the door open all the way, and flipped the little string light hanging from the ceiling. There it was. Lying face up on the floor of the closet was the Norton anthology, spine cracked, pages fanned open, just sitting there like it had been placed. Not dropped, not knocked, just waiting. I just stared at it, because that book was jammed between two others on the second highest shelf behind a glass door. That shelf was full, packed tight. The book sat flush with the edge. I knew that because I organized it all myself, and I never left books half pulled out or leaning. I stepped in slowly, like I was approaching something alive. I bent down and looked at the pages. My eyes flicked to the top of the left-hand page. Ben Jonson, The Alchemist. My stomach dropped. The exact play I'd just been thinking about. Not only was it the same book I had remembered, not only had it come off a shelf it couldn't have fallen from, but it was open to the exact play I needed. No bookmark, no bend in the spine to make it open to that page. Just opened perfectly. I didn't touch it. I just backed out of the closet and shut the door. For maybe 10 minutes, I just sat back at my desk, staring at the screen, not typing, not breathing much. My mind was racing, but not in a frantic way. More like it was trying to pull itself back together, piece by piece, and failing. I thought maybe I was tired. Maybe I'd done it myself earlier and forgot. But no, that door had been closed all night. I would have noticed. I know I didn't go into the closet, and that book was on a shelf that would have required both hands to remove cleanly. Eventually, I stood up again. I went back into the closet, picked up the anthology with both hands, and returned it to its shelf like I was handling something sacred. I didn't open it again. I didn't look at the page. I just put it back and shut the closet door again. This time, I locked it from the outside. I'm not even sure why. There was nothing in there to lock out. I didn't sleep that night. I stayed up with every light on, sipping coffee and watching my bedroom door like a scared kid. The next day I emailed the professor and told her I was dropping the class. Said I was switching majors. She didn't ask questions. I never went into that closet again for the rest of the semester. When I moved out, I gave away every single one of those old books. Left them in a pile next to a dumpster behind the library. I didn't want a single one following me. Some people have seen things. Shadows, figures, heard voices. Not me. I just had a book fall off a shelf. But it was the right book. Open to the right page. At the right moment. And no one will ever convince me that was coincidence. Something put that book there. Something that heard me. Or worse, thought it for me. I never believed in ghosts before that. Now I don't believe in anything else. Story 10. I'm Brandon. I live just outside Tallahassee, Alabama, and for a year I worked the overnight shift running medical supply deliveries. I had a regular route, starting at Montgomery and looping through a few backwoods towns, then cutting through the Talladega National Forest around 3 a.m. before circling back to base. The forest stretch was always the worst part, not because of the road, it was actually smooth, but because there was something about that part of the drive that made my skin crawl. I don't scare easy. I've worked night shifts most of my life, stayed in hurricane zones, driven through worse. But this was different. I didn't believe in ghosts. I still don't know what I believe now, but I'll never forget what happened that night. It was in early December, maybe the 10th or 11th. Cold but not freezing, I pulled into this rundown little gas station just before the forest. It's the last lit up spot before you're swallowed by trees. I didn't go inside, just used my card at the pump. I was smoking a cigarette, leaning against the door when I noticed something strange. The air had gone dead quiet. No wind, no insects, no cars. Even the gas pump stopped beeping like it was muted. I got this feeling, hard to explain, like I was being watched. I scanned around but didn't see anything except an old white sedan parked by the dumpster. No one in it, no one around it. I finished up, flicked the smoke, and got back in the van. That's when it started. You know how you can feel someone's eyes on you? That heavy, sinking pressure, like heat on your neck? As soon as I pulled out of the lot and hit the tree line, I felt it. Something was in the back seat. I didn't hear anything. Nothing moved, but I felt it. Clear as day. I glanced at the rear view and it was just black. No shape, no outline, just pitch dark behind me, even though my cabin light should have caught something, but it didn't. I didn't turn around. I couldn't. It was like my whole body locked up. My hands were sweating so bad I could barely grip the wheel, and my legs started shaking even though I wasn't cold. And then I knew what it was. I didn't see her, but I knew. An old woman. Long, stringy gray hair, head tilted, face like that scream mask, stretched and sagging, eyes like dark pits. I swear to God I never turned around. But I knew she was sitting right behind me, inches away, leaning forward like she was breathing on my neck. I started whispering, "I don't even remember what. I'm not here to hurt anything," or "I respect this place." Just stuff that didn't even make sense. I wasn't thinking anymore. I was just begging. I didn't dare stop the van, didn't blink more than I had to. About halfway through the forest stretch, maybe 10 minutes in, the feeling just vanished, like she had gotten out at some invisible exit in the trees. My body went limp, and I had to pull over because I was literally shaking. I threw the door open, puked in the ditch, and sat there with my head between my knees like I'd just run a marathon. That night broke something in me. I didn't even tell my boss. Just kept running the route like nothing happened, though I avoided that gas station after that. For weeks, I drove the forest stretch holding my breath. But nothing happened again. Eventually, I guess I convinced myself I imagined it. Stress, sleep deprivation, whatever. Then about 4 months later, I got transferred to another route and this new guy, Jake, took over mine. We were loading up one night and I asked, just casually, how the forest stretch was treating him. He stopped stacking boxes and looked at me real slow. Said, "You ever feel like you weren't alone out there?" I didn't answer, just watched him. He went on, "I swear something rides with me in the back sometimes. Not every night, just now and then. Big, I don't know, beast-looking thing, like a jackal or some shit. My stomach dropped. I laughed it off, kind of. Said, yeah, I had a couple weird drives out there, too. Left it at that, but later I brought it up to one of the old-timers, guy named Reggie, who'd had the route years before me. I just said, hey, you ever get spooked in the forest stretch? He looked at me dead serious and said, yeah, that thing in the back seat. You saw it too? Different faces, different shapes, but it was always in the forest, always in the back seat, always just there, watching. I haven't driven that route in over a year now, but the thing is, I still can't drive at night without checking the rearview mirror over and over again. I still keep my windows cracked, just a little, like maybe I'm letting something out. I still park under lights when I stop for gas. You ever feel like something found you once, and now it's just waiting for the right night to find you again? Yeah, I do.